This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, November 23rd, 2020 edition of Invest Talk. Yes, it is Thanksgiving week. It means the holidays are in full swing and markets are in full swing as well. A lot of rotation in the market right now, with more news about another vaccine that looks pretty promising. So we now have three that look effective. The question is, how safe are they? How easy are they to roll out? So those are the future answers, or future questions, however you want to put it. And the market is starting to try to answer that for itself, right? And, you know, the more options there are for a vaccine, the better likelihood we will reopen in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and get back to some semblance of normalcy. And that's what the market is starting to rotate into. That doesn't mean that the uncertainty goes away. There's always some level of uncertainty. Today's world, certainly a heightened level. But what's also certain is that there will be stimulus measures of some kind. Now, our main focus point today discusses kind of that, one of the recent stimulus measures that will expire at the end of the year. And that'll be an important maybe marker point of what governments and central banks are doing and how they are married together. So we're going to discuss that. But let's jump into the market today. The S&P was up about 20 points. Modest up day. The NASDAQ, that was, did we close up? I think we still closed up. Yeah, up about 25 points, a little bit less. So you saw the continued rotation, once again, out of growth stocks into the value side of the market. A lot of the FANG names were down, actually, right? The Apples of the world, I believe Google was down as well. Yep, $8. You're looking, talking about Facebook. That was down. Amazon, down. Netflix, down. Right? So you're starting to see the dichotomy here, right? The change of the winds, right? The winds were blowing towards growth stocks, towards tech stocks, towards the exciting names in the market. Now, not so much. Things are changing, and you need to be prepared and adjust your portfolio accordingly if you want to be successful, right? So many people, especially new investors, I know there's a lot of new listeners that are new investors that are out there that are, right, COVID kind of brought their interest into investing even more, right? A lot of times because they couldn't do much else. Other times it was out of necessity. Other times it was because they were getting money from the government and they wanted to invest it some way. So there's a lot of motivations for the new interest in investing. But needless to say, those people, and is natural, tend to focus on what they know, what's interesting, what's exciting, which are growth names, stories. But real investing is about a business. Business. And profits and cash flow and earnings. And so that's what we are here to understand, is how to position your strategy, your portfolio for the right opportunities in the market, as well as your risk tolerance and your ultimate goals. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. I always encourage everyone to call in sooner rather than later, because we do have an information-packed podcast for you today. So let's get right to our first caller at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Lynn in Illinois. Hey, I'm looking to buy one of these two medical REITs. I'd like your thoughts on Medical Properties Trust, symbol MPW, and Sabra Healthcare, symbol SBRA. Thanks for your comments, and I'll be listening on the podcast for your thoughts.
All right. He's looking at Sabra Healthcare. This is a REIT that owns 423 healthcare-related properties in 38 states. Revenue and profits in decline because of COVID. The big question is, how much of their business is the nursing home environment, which is interesting. So the company is growing its IT solutions division, which is 27% of revenue. Let's see. I'm just looking at the percentage of bookings. This is interesting. I'd have to dig into this one a little bit more. This one looks a little more diversified. Oh, actually, you know why? I'm looking at the wrong symbol. You know what? Sometimes you just type in two letters in the wrong order and it screws everything up. Okay, Sabra Healthcare. They have real estate, healthcare real estate, assisted living centers, mental health facilities, nursing facilities, etc. 8% yield, roughly. 7% actually. So they cut their dividend recently. Let me look at MPW. You know, it's always tough to get a sense of the two businesses, especially if they're in the same industry. How different are they, right? Medical properties is doing much, much better. Revenue's up 47% year over year. Earnings up 24%. It's more consistent. Looks to have a better balance sheet in my book. So, you know what? I'm going to go with medical properties. Looks like a better balance sheet, better chart. Better business line in general. So I'm definitely going with MPW, Medical Properties REIT. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We're headed into a break, and Steve Pease will be here tomorrow, but I will return next week. That's right. The markets will be closed due to the holiday on Thursday, but we have some special best of caller questions programs lined up for you Thursday and Friday. But now I'm here waiting for your live calls at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. You can get your free Invest Talk podcast downloads anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or InvestTalk.com. The anytime listener lines never close. Steve and Justin are waiting for your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Julie in Georgia. Wants to talk about value stocks.
Hey, Justin, thanks for taking my call. So I'm heeding your advice to move more towards value right now. But the problem I'm having is that everything I look at seems to be overvalued. And I don't know, you know, my method is kind of, oh, I'm thinking of this company, let me look it up. And there must be a better way for me to look for these value stocks other than just kind of randomly shooting. And wondered if you could give me some suggestions on that.
Yeah, there's actually a great the best free tool. Obviously, we have more sophisticated tools. We pay for big databases and software that helps us gather literally hundreds of different financial metrics on each company. But if you want a free screener, the best one I've seen is finviz.com, finviz.com, and there's a screener part, mm-hmm. and you can literally you can filter by what index they trade it on, what their market cap is. You can look at fundamentals such as forward PE ratios. You can look at earnings per share growth, net profit margins, operating margins, gross margins, return on investment. There's a lot there for free, and that's probably what I would use if you're trying to filter for a little bit more value and you're not just going off the top of your head, because you know there are literally thousands of names out there and you're probably only going to be able to recall 100 or 200 at best, right? That you
right.
know about, right? So a lot of the best investments
right.
are companies most people have never heard of, more B2B type of businesses as opposed to what the average person knows are B2C, right? Where consumers are seeing and using their products or their services. But some of the best businesses, actually I would say the majority of the best businesses in the world, are actually businesses serving other businesses in some way, shape, or form. So that's what I would use if I didn't want to pay for a screening tool. We use YCharts, that costs money, but it's really up to you how you want to do it.
Hey, I'm not big time enough yet to pay, but I will definitely check out your suggestion. Thank you so much.
No problem, Julie. Thanks for the call. Now, from time to time, I like to set aside a few moments to mention that here on Invest Talk and at my company, KPP Financial, based in Irvine, California, we operate with a philosophy of independent thinking and shared success. So what that means basically is that our goal each and every day to our clients as well as on air is to provide you unbiased guidance. And the way we do that is practicing parallel investing. It means we invest right alongside our clients. So I encourage you to take advantage of our offer to provide a free portfolio review assessment via telephone, Skype, Jive meetings, etc. Send us a message through investtalk.com, or you can call our KPP offices in Irvine, California at 800-557-5461. There's always no obligation. Just talk it out. See how we can help in some way, shape, or form. We would love to help you. Now, my focus point today concerns the story. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin says there's plenty of firepower remaining, even though he is recalling roughly $800 billion from the Federal Reserve, to the Treasury that was supposed to go towards some lending programs. So I'm going to get into that and unwrap that story and what that might mean for markets and liquidity. Next up, post-COVID world, right? We're starting to think about the post-COVID world, and there has been a lot of shifts in habits due to the shutdown, due to COVID. And the big question for investors is, what habits will endure? What habits will snap back to pre-COVID? And there's probably a bulk that are more in the middle. And you have to gauge how much that will benefit or hurt the companies that you are investing in. So we're going to discuss that. Also, I'm going to touch on history when it comes to very expensive stocks. So we're going to look at going back decades and really look at the previous times when there were very high multiples of enterprise value to sales, meaning the value that the market was putting on a company in relation to its sales, and we're going to unpack that and see what that means for the current environment where many companies are trading at pretty extreme valuations. And then lastly, companies are starting to increase or reverse their dividend cuts. And I think that's going to be an interesting trend going forward, and it means that leaders of these large corporations are starting to gain more confidence about the future. So we're going to unpack that story as well. But let's see if I can squeeze in one more caller question before the break. This one from Ohio.
Hey, this is Andrew from Columbus, Ohio. Really appreciate the podcast. Justin and Steve have been listening since about March of this year. I have a position in Avalara. It's a cloud-based software company. And they've done really well over the last year, even through the pandemic, up 112%, and they keep growing. So I entered at about $49, and I just want to see your guys' take on that, whether it's a short-term play or a long-term play. It doesn't really matter to me. Just want your thoughts. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Good luck.
All right, this is Avalara. AVLR is the symbol and is a cloud-based provider of software solutions to help businesses of all types and sizes comply with tax requirements for transactions worldwide. So I like that type of business that is necessary, right, to keep track of those taxes. And when someone turns to a solution like this, they probably don't change it very often. And so I like the business overall, but it is extremely expensive. You're talking enterprise value to revenue of 28 times, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But they don't make money, $14 billion valuation, but technically it's still very strong. But if you start to have that multiple contraction across that industry, this is going to get hurt. So I would have a tight or a stop on this of 100-day moving average at 136. And obviously, it's going to rise over time, but that would be my stop. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I'd love to hear whatever is on your mind. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about Riskalyze? It's a brief question and answer form that you fill out online. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein will also get a copy of your responses. They can use the Riskalyze results to help you formulate a strategy that fits your investing risk tolerance. Learn more anytime and take the Riskalyze quiz at investtalk.com.
Now, my focus point today concerns a story. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin says there's plenty of firepower remaining, even though he is recalling about $800 billion that was to be deployed through the Exchange Stabilization Fund. And basically, this is taking money away from certain programs that are buying corporate bonds, loaning money to state and local governments, as well as the Main Street lending program to small and medium-sized businesses. And he basically says we don't need to buy more corporate bonds. The municipal bond market is working and people are able to borrow lots of money in the markets. And this is really about liquidity here. The Fed was willing and able and announced that they were going to buy these securities, right? Corporate bonds, junk bonds, municipal bonds, to create that liquidity in the market. And that's really what solved the crisis in March, April timeframe, was the solvency hasn't changed too much. Certainly some companies are able to refinance their debt and avoid bankruptcy a little bit better than they would have in March or April. But if you're truly insolvent, you have very little income, earnings, cash flow, etc., you're going to go bankrupt, even if the government is, or the Fed is buying corporate bonds, right? So this is really about the liquidity that the Fed can deliver to specific markets. Now, the Fed has other mechanisms that can reliquify markets, but this certainly helped. But what the Fed chief is saying is that, talking about Jerome Powell, is that he understands my view of the congressional intent and that I have a very close working relationship with him. So that is what Mnuchin is saying, not Mnuchin, but Jerome Powell is talking about Mnuchin, that they have a strong working relationship. And this is really the future of policy going forward, is the new incoming Treasury Secretary, looks like it's going to be Janet Yellen, which makes a lot of sense, right? She was the former Fed chair. She understands how they work. They're going to be married. And they are married. They have to be. In order to keep the fiscal deficits that we have to have monetization from the Federal Reserve through bond buying, treasury buying, right? So this just goes to show how important that relationship is to have both sides understanding the end goal, which is to support the economy going forward. Now, long term, you can talk about whether this is the right move. It doesn't matter. I would argue it's probably not the right move long term. But politicians don't care about the long term. Politicians care about today, right? Policymakers care about today and tomorrow and next week. They don't care about next year, 10 years from now, 30 years from now, they don't care, right? So this is a very interesting story in that context. And it just shows you what the next phase of policy will look like. And that's something that's very important to follow, because that will be essential to understanding where the economy is moving. Now, if you listen to Invest Talk on a regular basis, you have probably noticed that we get calls from all over America. In fact, we encourage your questions any time of day or night at 888-99-CHART. So here comes a question that came in earlier from Wisconsin.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Tim from Wisconsin giving you a call. Been a listener for about 6 months now, and I really appreciate your show. My question today is regarding taxable accounts. So I have a taxable brokerage account that has been doing really well this year. And I also have a 401k through my employer. So my question is, can I take some of my gains that I've taken from my taxable account and put them into my 401k to the tax deferred account to avoid some of the taxes at the end of the year? Look forward to your answer. Thanks.
No, but you can save more, right? You can talk to your HR department and save more of your check or all of your check to get up to the maximum that you can put into your 401k, which there's some calculations based on your company match, et cetera, but you should talk to your HR department to try to maximize that. So you can't put that money in straight from your brokerage account, but you can do it via your paycheck. So that's the way I would do it, and I would encourage you to do that if you can, and any money you put into that 401k is a write-off on your income, on your taxes, and so that might offset some of the gains that you have in your taxable account. Great question. I appreciate that. Now, let's touch a little bit before the break. Maybe after the break I'll get into the details, but there was an interesting study of extraordinarily high-priced companies in the Russell 1000. Russell 1000 is a very broad-based index, and it speaks to and looks at the history of companies that are trading at very high multiples, talking about enterprise value to sales of 10 or 20 times, right? And we're going to look at both of those, 10 times and 20 times. Now, one example is the caller before, Alvalara, trading at 28 times enterprise value to sales. So after the break, I'm going to get into what history says about these companies that are trading at extremely high multiples and what are the odds that they outperform over the coming 5 years. So that's what we're going to discuss after the break. But on the next Invest Talk, the story, a retail trade group is predicting that holiday sales will be up and produce a strong finish for 2020. That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART. If growing an e-commerce business is your focus, you will definitely need a platform that's focused on growth. So I am going to share some information with you right now. Knowing this will empower you and allow you to better position your brand, products, and services. In fact, I think you will be relieved to learn that there is a superior marketing platform built for you and ready now. I'm talking about Klaviyo, spelled K-L-A-V-I-Y-O. Klaviyo is the ultimate e-commerce marketing platform for online brands of all kinds and all sizes. Whether you're just getting started or running a well-known brand, it gives you everything you need to send memorable branded emails, text messages, and more, so you can build strong relationships that keep your customers coming back. With flexible automations, powerful insights, and super precise targeting, Klaviyo is a faster way to turn great ideas into great customer experiences. That's why it's trusted by more than 40,000 brands. In fact, on average, Klaviyo customers see a 41% increase in overall revenue within 5 months. Klaviyo scales with you so you never have to switch. They support everything from garage startups to iconic billion-dollar brands. Are you motivated? Want to learn more about how you can grow your brand with Klaviyo? It's easy. Visit klaviyo.com/grow to get started with a free trial today. That's klaviyo.com/grow. Klaviyo.
This is Invest Talk, the radio program and podcast dedicated to helping you achieve financial freedom. You may be a regular listener. You may even have called a few times. But if you've never called, what are you waiting for? The phone lines are open, and Steve and Justin would love to hear your questions right now. Call 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I previewed this topic about very expensive companies, meaning companies that are trading at very high multiples. And this study goes back decades, and it looks at companies when they pass the threshold of enterprise value to sales of 10 times. Now, enterprise value is market cap plus debt and divided by sales, right? Divided by the amount of revenue that the company is bringing in. And this qualifies as pretty expensive, right? When you're trading at 10 or sometimes 20 times sales when it comes to your enterprise value, it's a good time to ask how these companies have performed historically, and basically not well. Not as bad as you would expect, but still not very good. Now, the big takeaway is that a few successes make up for a lot of the losers. Now, for stocks in the Russell 1000, whose enterprise value to sales exceed 10 for the first time, over the next 5 years, the average outperformance is underperformance is 65%. So only about 35% of them outperform. So you have a two-thirds chance of those companies underperforming over the next 5 years. And if you look at the even more extreme examples, 20 times, when they hit the 20 times enterprise value to sales ratio, over the next 5 years, the underperformance is 73%. So about 3 out of 4 companies underperform over the next 5 years. Now, there's a big reason why many companies, especially these growth names, the software names, tech names, trade at such high multiples, like the Avalara, the one that we spoke about earlier. And the reason is low risk-free rate, right? Where interest rates are near zero, which means when you have company with accelerating growth, when you have a basically zero discount rate, there's really no upper bound on its valuation. And that's why you're seeing such massive increases in these valuations. So secular stagnation, right, the new normal post the financial crisis, has actually been very good for these growthier names, because people are looking for, or investors are looking for growth, looking for companies that are increasing their top line. And they're increasingly bidding up these names to astronomical prices. Now, what's going to happen if we do successfully get out of this pandemic, you have the economy growing, you have policies that are more growth-oriented, right? Like massive fiscal spending, for example, and you have interest rates going up, that's why you're going to continue to see this shift to value stocks from growth. And multiples contract. Okay? And now, if we go back into that secular stagnation, if policy doesn't bring about big, true economic growth, then maybe you see growth continue to do fairly well. But going back to the point about why these companies tend to underperform, and the reason is because if you look at history and the return on equity of these companies that have such high multiples, when they hit that 10 times enterprise value to sales or 20 times, on average, when they hit that, their return on equity is about zero, meaning it's not a profitable company. It's all about the story and plowing all cash flow back into the business and the growth, which works until maybe there's no more growth, you find competitors that start to eat your lunch, and now your growth slows and you have to produce a profit. But history says that going forward, looking out, most of these companies don't actually produce positive return on capital going forward. So the median ROE for the 5 years after crossing that 10 and 20 times sales threshold doesn't improve at all. It means they don't actually become profitable in the longer term. So the idea that these growth names are going to somehow magically become great businesses, more often than not, far more often than not, they actually don't. And so the stocks valued at these high levels rarely deliver the earnings to justify these inflated prices. So good history lesson there. Let's go to Robert in Washington. He wants to talk about gold.
Hi.
Yeah. Hello. What can I help you with?
Well, I'm just looking at the gold prices, and it just seems like it's just tanking right now. And the rumors that I'm understanding is that now that oil prices are finally going back up, the cost of drill will be going up as well, and then the economy is improving. So is now the time to get out of gold?
No, actually, I still think this is a good buying opportunity for the miners. You know, we had that surge in spring and in early summer, and frankly, it got into an overbought situation. There were a lot of, I think, weak hands getting into it, right? Where people were chasing that return and that story about the gold market. But I've said this before. There are three catalysts for gold prices. Short term, the dollar. The dollar has been kind of choppy over the past 3 or 4 months, and really sideways since early August. And real yields, which, you know, interest rates have been going up. Real yields haven't gone up too much. They're still negative, but not quite as negative as they were midsummer. So that's certainly been a headwind. And then I think, the third thing that is a little more short term is kind of the ebbs and flows of investor sentiment. And I think that's starting to get extremely negative. And I think that is a big buying opportunity. And if you're looking at flows out of gold, they're near records. And that just shows me that all those weak hands are starting to capitulate and sell out. And I'm getting a lot of calls on air. I'm getting a lot of calls in office. What's going on with gold? And that's always, to me, an indicator that people are kind of getting emotional and freaking out. But longer term, once again, the deficits, structural fiscal deficits, are very, very bullish for precious metals, because you're going to continue debasement of the currency, continued negative real rates for that the Treasury is going to implement. The Fed is going to implement, and that still remains bullish long term. So I understand the problem, but it's still up. I don't know what's gold up this year. Probably still 30-40%. It's still one of the best asset classes on the year, right? And still above its major moving averages. 200-day moving averages still pointed higher. 100-day still pointed higher. So all those longer-term moving averages are still perfectly fine. This is a natural pullback consolidation period after a very overbought situation in the summer. So fine with gold here. 888-99 chart. 888-992-4278. How you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 15 minutes left, so if you're going to call, you want to do it right now. Now let's touch on the COVID pandemic changing in habits of Americans and really those around the world, and what that means post-pandemic. Right, because that's what we're starting to think about, is what is going to happen post-pandemic when it comes to eating, shopping, entertainment, etc., working. And that's the biggest question for investors, is how much will never go back to the way it was, how much will absolutely go back the way it was, and a lot will be in the middle. And this will have big implications for the economy as a whole and particular sectors. And each industry has its own nuances to think about. Now, in certain instances where consumers and businesses were just creating a workaround, right? We know that happy hour, for example, with your friends, that's not going to happen on a Zoom call 5 years from now, right? That's still going to happen at a restaurant, at a bar, or whatever. So actual nights out entertainment like that, I think that'll definitely snap back, right? Live entertainment, live music, definitely snap back. There are other things in the middle though, right? What about fitness? What about movies in person? Those have been in a competition for a long period of time, right? At home versus at a gym. Streaming at home versus going to the movies. And I think that this pandemic will cause them to skew a little bit more to at home. But I still think there'll be a big snapback. Now, 1.2 billion domestic movie tickets were sold last year, but that's the same as 5 years ago. So you're seeing that shift to streaming, but I don't think movie theaters are going away completely. One thing I think could be more permanent, having groceries delivered. People get used to going online, picking things they want, pulling up to the grocery store, and just having it sent up, you know, put in their car, or actually having it delivered to their home. I think those things are definitely more permanent. Cooking more. People that were handy in the kitchen have probably grown more so. Right? Purchase of equipment for food preparation, cooking, storage rose 41% from March 15th to October 31st. Sales of metal bakeware, toaster ovens, air fryers up 57%, 75%, and 83% respectively. Now, I don't think that'll continue because most of those are one-time items that people will just have in their kitchen. But you're going to need food from a grocery store to use those things. And I think that will continue. I think that will be sticky. What was resilient? Well, discount stores, TJ Maxx, Ross, their sales barely ticked down during the pandemic. But department stores like Macy's, Kohl's did much, much worse. What's interesting, though, is the Walmarts, Targets of the world, they're becoming a lot more like the department stores. For example, Target is opening Ulta Beauty shops inside their stores. That sound familiar? So, you know, I was there. I was at a department store over the weekend with my mom. It was her birthday. I bought her some stuff, and there was a, I think it was, what was the, it was some cosmetic store within the department store. Sephora, maybe? So I think that'll continue. What's interesting is that furniture shopping has actually shifted more online, right? Wayfair saw sales increase more than 75%, and typically that's more of an in-person item. So that's what I'm watching to see if that is more of a permanent shift or a one-time change. And that's more uncertain to me than more of the other things. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. And yes, the economy was reopening. Now in some areas, it's shutting down again. But one thing I know for sure is that you cannot allow your retirement objectives to be controlled by this pandemic. You need to develop strategies, be able to optimize your portfolio for your particular goals. And that's what our job on Invest Talk is to do, is to help you with that process. And if you want more hands-on help, I encourage you to reach out to myself or Steve Peasley at our KP Financial offices in Irvine, California. We can help you. We want to help you. We'd love to help you. Now, whether you're a conservative investor edging closer to retirement, or maybe you're a younger worker looking for more aggressive opportunities, we can customize an investment strategy designed to achieve your particular financial freedom goals. So to get started with a no-cost portfolio review, please call or send a message through investtalk.com. And now I'm here. I'm ready to provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. And we're taking your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hey, Steve and Justin. Carl calling from Ohio. Got a question about preloading the 401k early in the year. If you can afford it, does it make sense to put the whole $18,000 in the first couple months, or is it better to dollar cost average throughout the whole year? Look forward to hearing the answer on the podcast. Thank you.
Well, if history is your guide, that markets tend to go up, then you want to get the money in sooner rather than later. So I would say it does make sense to front load it. Now, certainly some times or some years, you're going to say, we had a big sell-off in the summer, and I wish I would have dollar cost average in, and that would have been better. And certainly you will have those years. Just nature of the game, nature of the investment world. Years are very different, right? This year was very different than last year. And I guarantee 2021 will be very different than this year. So, but if you look longer term, if that's your strategy every single year, then I think you'll do better by front-loading it if you can. So that's a great question, though, especially if you are maxing out your 401k, you make a good amount of money, you know you're going to hit that max at some point later in the year. If you can front-load it, I definitely would do that. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here, to help you achieve your own particular version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do it right now at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Is it delivering the types of gains you want and need to achieve financial freedom? Well, turn up the volume, because there are many questions that deserve unbiased answers. And Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Sean from Phoenix, Arizona. I've recently invested in a couple of stocks, RGEN and Gild, G-I-L-D, and they do pharmaceuticals for the COVID. And recently saw that they dropped in price today, and just kind of curious, because I know the vaccine, it recently just came out for 95% from Pfizer. So just curious if my goal was to wait until at least the fourth quarter, pretty much when they make the money on the fourth quarter, and just to see if that would be wait till then, or I should just pull out now while everything's going down. Thank you, and I will listen to your call on the podcast. Bye.
All right. Now, these are two different types of companies. Gilead is a more pharmaceutical company that makes therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases. They have a drug, what's the name of it? I forgot the name of it at the moment, that does help treat COVID, but it's clearly not changed their trajectory. I don't think there's enough sales for it to really make enough money, as well as it's hepatitis C, I think C or B, if you could fit exactly, but that drug basically cures their patients, and therefore they don't have long-term customers in that way, and their earnings have been falling from $12.61 in 2015 down to $6.60 this year. So I'm not a big fan of Gilead, and same with REGN. This is more of a, they don't sell drugs, where they more make, let's see, yeah, I guess they actually, you're right, they do make drugs. And is it RGN or REGN? I forget exactly. I think you're looking at Regeneron. So Regeneron is rolling over, and I think both of these names are under pressure for that reason, right? That you're getting the vaccine. The story behind these names is waning. If I'm going to invest in one long term, it's definitely going to be Regeneron, to be honest with you. So I'm going to pass on Gilead, but longer term, I think Regeneron is a solid company. I want to go back to the InvestTalk voice bank before we close for the day. This question came in from San Jose.
Hey, guys. It's Rob from San Jose. I purchased Carnival Cruise Line, CCL, a while ago. I'm looking forward to its recovery. And my question is, what would be a logical exit point after it's gone up? I know that they've got a lot more debt now than they probably had pre-COVID. So I think waiting for it to return to pre-COVID levels is probably overly optimistic. Thanks, guys, for everything you do. Bye.
I was looking at Carnival Cruise Line, and he is correct. They have issued a lot of shares to stay solvent, really, right? They're not a U.S. company, so they can't really get a bailout, or couldn't really get a bailout. And so they had to issue a decent amount of new shares. And that's really what's going to dilute future shareholders. And so I agree, return to 50 bucks or so before, you know, where it started at the beginning of the year is a little over-optimistic. But if you look at the chart, and if I run kind of a fib retrace here, I'm going to say a recovery to about $35 a share. Right now it's at 18 or so, is a reasonable expectation. It's not guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed in this business, but I do think it could work its way up there. But I think it's going to be fits and starts, right? Not everyone's going to get vaccinated right away. I think there was a cruise ship that went out a month ago or so, and it returned with 5 COVID patients. So I thought that was pretty interesting. It was in the Caribbean somewhere. I don't know what cruise line it was. But it just shows you how difficult this business is. And they, not permanently, but I think for an extended period of time, people are going to be more weary of going on cruise ships and what could happen because they've had problems like this before, more one-offs. But I think their business is going to be very slow to come back compared to many other reopening trades. So you need to be patient with it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasy will be here tomorrow, but I will return next week. We have some great Best of Caller Question compilation podcasts lined up for Thursday and Friday. In the meantime, please remember to tell your friends and family members that they can choose from over 100 archived Invest Talk podcasts for free download over at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, as well as investtalk.com, where they can listen live to the program each and every weekday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. They can just click on the Listen Live button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.